Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Jenny Donahue, who is a candidate for City Council in Newburyport. Jenny, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you so much for having me, and good morning to all of your listeners.
I want to usually start out with our guests and give us your 2-3-4 minute bio, and then we can get into some questions.
Sure. So, yes, my name is Jenny Donahue. I am 38 years old. I was raised here in Newburyport, one of 8 siblings, so I'm from a big family. My brother and myself are both legally blind. I'm a mother and a wife. My husband is Patrick, and my son is Oliver, who is 6 years old and attends the local public elementary school. I am a former manager of Turtle Alley Chocolates in Salem. There's also, I think you might know, the store in Gloucester, and that was my world for a good 10 years. Really just a background in the service industry and in small business management and retail. I guess that's in a nutshell,
okay.
A quick bio.
And now you were appointed by the mayor, confirmed by the Newburyport City Council, as part of the Newburyport Commission on Disabilities. Can you share with us your work on the commission?
Sure, yes. I submitted my request for appointment about 6 years ago when I met with the commission at that time, which was only 2 members, and it was apparent that they needed some help. So that is when I joined, and I mostly had focused on helping to recruit new members, build up the commission, which I have been able to do for the most part, though we are still seeking new members. Some of the work that I've been able to do since I've been on the commission, one of the first issues that I addressed was sort of the lack of knowledge that the commission existed. We put together a brochure. I spent a long time working on that, creating that, and pooling resources for that brochure of state and local agencies for people. We had that mailed out to the entire city via the city survey that goes out each year. Other things that I started to delve into was addressing handicap parking abuse, which is rampant, I think, statewide, countrywide. There doesn't seem to be any limitation on that. But what we were able to do here in Newburyport was we approached the city council to adjust the fine ordinance, which was rather outdated. It, in fact, didn't even reflect the current fine. But we did have that adjusted, and the fine raised a bit. And we also purchased all brand new signs. We had new signs designed for all the handicapped parking spots to include that there is a fine amount involved, with the feeling that, you know, seeing that monetary number as a possible, you know, repercussion of taking those spots illegally, that would go a little further than just the sign that says not to park there.
And that
was a pretty involved endeavor.
and there's a standard, isn't there, for handicap parking in terms of number of spots you're supposed to have if you're if you have a parking lot. I believe it's like 1 to 25, or it may even be.
Yes. So basically, that standard is pretty much in place here in Newburyport. There really were no lots municipally that didn't have the appropriate number of spots. You are correct that for every 25 spots, there should be one handicap accessible spot. So in the bigger lots, you'll see anywhere from 3 to 6, depending on the number of total spaces. Another little bit that's attached to that is that there also needs to be one spot that is van accessible, which is different because it does include the sort of zebra stripes you see in the back and on the side of those spots that allow for loading and unloading of passengers in wheelchairs. And the stipulation for that is there must be at least one. So if a parking lot only has 25 spots and they only have one handicap spot, that one spot must be van accessible. So we did our diligence to make sure all of the lots had the appropriate amount of spaces. Again, not an easy endeavor because it really wasn't written down anywhere. We physically had to go out and count all the spaces in the entire lot and then determine if we had the right number of handicapped spaces. There are still some issues I have with parking on the waterfront. All of the handicapped parking spots are located in one corner, and technically they're supposed to be at every point of access, which they're not. But the waterfront parking is an issue that is a bigger issue in the city, so it hasn't really gotten tackled to move those handicapped spots accordingly, because the fate of the general parking down there is still to be determined.
One of the issues that is happening in different places on the North Shore is as cities and towns get into upgrading their sidewalks and making them handicap accessible, they have to increase the width of the sidewalk in most cases. And what some places are finding is the roads are getting narrower. And it's if you have sidewalks on both sides of a city street, you may lose a few inches. But what you're seeing is more up on ramp, off ramp areas. So if someone's in a wheelchair, they can access the road or what have you. And that's, you know, for an old New England town that has macadamized cow paths, that's a big challenge. But it's happening gradually.
Yes, it's definitely been a very slow, gradual progression of attacking that, because you're right, in New England, that is a much bigger challenge than in a lot of other U.S. cities that are not very old. Of course, many of the New England towns have very narrow sidewalks, so that, of course, becomes an issue when they do need to go in and reconstruct it to make it wider, make it code compliant. The curb cuts, or ramps, as they're known, that is also an ongoing project, sort of never ending, because really every single corner, every single crossing needs to have that wheelchair access. Otherwise, you have folks basically stranded on the sidewalk. But one of the issues that came up that was sort of by default is once they started creating these curb cuts on all the corners, it, you know, it allows for access for people in wheelchairs, but what it inadvertently did was allow for danger to visually impaired pedestrians. So a person who is blind, who's depending on their stick to find the curb to know when they're at the edge of the sidewalk, that curb is now removed, and they don't realize they're walking straight into the road. So then what has been put in place are what we see more often now popping up. There are these sort of tactile pads. They're called truncated dome pads, and those are those sort of metal, you know, pads with the bumps all over them. That is specifically designed to alert a person who is blind that they are now at the edge and about to go into the street. So there's been some contention around that, because when they're not installed properly, it can also inadvertently create something of a barrier to a wheelchair user, or at least some level of discomfort going over those bumps. But when they're installed the right way, it is a little more fluent and not such an issue. But it's tough to straddle the different challenges for different disabilities. So while curb cuts and truncated domes are considered best practice, they're not in the regulations that the building codes go by. That is changing. There are new regulations that are hopefully going to be adopted soon that address more specifically public rights of way. But the curb cuts, they are required, but they don't always happen. And basically, the requirement is that if a road is being worked on or a sidewalk is being worked on, regardless of how close it is to the corner, they are supposed to then outfit that corner with a ramp if there isn't currently one. Unfortunately, though, it just doesn't always happen that way. But we've worked pretty good with our DPS department to really make sure that those types of things aren't slipping through the cracks and not happening when they need to. Of course, sidewalks are a pretty big issue in the city of Newburyport, like many old New England towns, but especially one that's laden with lots of bricks and lots of sidewalks that have fallen into disarray over the years. There's so many, it's hard to tackle them all.
Moving to some other questions, we have a few more minutes to go. City councils tend to be, you're running for city council at large, and city councils versus a mayor. Most charters have a check and balance system. A strong mayor appoints people. There's people that are subject to approval by the city council, hence a check and balance. But there's some built-in institutional rivalry of sorts. What are your thoughts about that, and how well would you say that the current city council works with the current mayor, and how do you see that relationship going forward?
That's definitely a tougher question to answer. I don't know that there really is a very definitive answer. I do feel that the city council really does need to work well with the current administration in City Hall. When you have a divide, it certainly makes it a lot harder to get things done that need to be done. But I think that transparency has a lot to do with it. The sharing of all information is very important. I can't really speak to the current mayor's relationship with the city council because I'm not part of the city council, but from my understanding, it hasn't always been the most fluent. And there certainly have been some, I think, issues of contention between the two over the last few years.
And, of course, you have Bob Cronin, who's a member of the city council, who's challenging the incumbent mayor. So there's also that to add to the equation.
Right. And it certainly would make one assume that maybe the city council, isn't necessarily happy with with everything the mayor has brought before them or has attempted. But again, I can't really speak to the relationship that I'm just not a part of yet.
Okay.
I just don't have the experience there personally.
The city has a website, and I guess a question I'd ask candidates is how much does a city website contribute to the dissemination of information? Is it updated? Is it functional? Does it help people navigate their way through government, the array of city services, and so forth? And what could be done better if you have an idea?
Well, I think that all of those things are definitely very important. The website is, in this day and age, is the fastest and easiest, most convenient way to get updates from the city. I know that the mayor does try to keep it updated and keep the more pertinent pieces of information or projects right on the homepage. But, I think there's always room for improvement and growth with anything of that nature, just because the tides are always changing. And I think a lot of folks do depend on the city website to provide updates of, current things when there's parking bans and things like that. It's important, to make sure that stuff is getting updated on a regular basis, as things come up. I think we could do a little bit better, but I think for the most part, we're probably in a good spot, but again, I think there's always room for improvement on anything online.
Well, thank you. I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. We have a full crew here, and I have to go to my next guest. But thank you, and very, very best wishes to you in your campaign for a member of the Newburyport City Council.
Thank you very much. Excuse me. I appreciate the time and opportunity, and thank you very much.